BJ is gone. You know, it's very interesting how that came about. You know, this is the first time. It just suddenly hit me tonight when I heard that Mr. Johnson had passed on, that this is the first time I can remember personally when we did not have a living ex-president. Think about it for a minute. Can you recall any time in your lifetime that we did not have a living ex-president? It would have to be, when did Mr. Hoover die? Not that long ago, actually, sometime in the 50s, wasn't it? Something like that. And, of course, General Eisenhower died a couple of years back. And then Harry Truman, and now Lyndon Johnson. And it just hit me that this is the first time that I can remember, first time in my lifetime, that there hasn't been at least one ex-living president. You know, the death of a president does peculiar things to people, and I think it's related to a lot of the ways that we secretly, in our own inner time clock, judge our own lives. That presidents, in a sense, are a kind of counterpoint. A sort of overweening melody, in a sense, to the tune that we play in our private lives. There's always a president, and nobody alive ever, well, since the days of Washington, who has been an American, cannot say honestly that the president was part of his life, just as much as, in many cases, his own relatives. And when a president dies, it specifically marks an end not only to a specific man, it also marks the end of a specific phase of history, and it also marks a specific end to a bit of our own personal histories. Now, it just seems like yesterday that people were rioting in the streets and were demonstrating and protesting. I remember down here in front of the Americana Hotel when Mr. Johnson was in town. Do you recall that, Herb? We were down there covering that. It just seems just like yesterday. Now, all the people who were there, who were involved in that specific thing that night, I'm talking about students and so on, already they're vaguely aware in their own mind that part of their personal life has also gone, which means that history is slowly overtaking your sense of the now. Do you get what I'm trying to say? I'm not saying it too well, but presidents. I heard somebody the other day when the inauguration was going on. I think it was Eric Sefarad. He was saying that there are guys in Washington who judge their lives specifically by various administrations. They've been in Washington probably for 40 years. And he said that they'll be sitting around talking. One will say, well, look, that was, let's see, Charlie was born in the second year of the Eisenhower administration. No, it was the third year of the Eisenhower administration, so that would make him X years old. and it's just a definite, very important part of our lives, the president. And I would be very remiss tonight, when Mr. Johnson is gone, to not... give a few personal comments on what I think of the presidency and the life we live. You know, it's a funny thing about a president, particularly in the case of Mr. Johnson. I think Lyndon Johnson is probably the last of what could be called the frontier type of president, as the nation becomes more and more urban and more and more of it, the quality of the nation changes and the people change and the attitudes change. And I think one of the reasons why Lyndon Johnson probably confused a lot of people, especially since he came after John Kennedy, who was a very different kind of man, that Johnson was really almost the John Wayne sort of character. He was out of another, not necessarily out of another time, but certainly out of another kind of life. He was a man of a fantastic gusto. And in a day of cool... this seems kind of strange. In other words, he was a guy of great appetites. He was known for his enjoyment of fine bourbon, for example, which is a specific thing. He dug dogs. I mean, very obviously dog, but not the elegant show type dogs. Johnson. I remember one incident of Johnson on a show I saw one time. He was being interviewed by somebody, and it was in his house. I guess it was in the White House, and this dog was climbing all over him, just a mutt, a terrible-looking mutt, and was climbing all over him. And it turns out that all through the interview, this dog is hanging on him and climbing, licking him and biting his ear and all that stuff. And he mentioned casually that this dog was a dog that one of his daughters had found at a gas station. The dog was hurt, then she saw it at the gas station and brought it home, and now the dog's living in the White House. Talk about a fantastic success story. But nevertheless, that was much more typical of Johnson. Johnson, this is not the kind of thing you can imagine in the wildest stretch of your imagination of President Nixon doing, having a stray dog living around and hanging around and grabbing his ear all the way through an interview. Just not the kind of guy. Johnson, on the other hand, was a guy of great gusto. And incidentally, it's interesting to see that during his tenure in office, a lot of people use the term Greek tragedy. The phrase classic tragedy kept reappearing. And there's some truth in that because, on the one hand, Johnson was a great figure as far as domestic reform was concerned. In fact, I read one black leader tonight said that probably since Lincoln, the blacks owe Lyndon Johnson more than any president in history. This is quite probably true. And on the other hand, he was hoist on a curious kind of inverted, not really inverted, but let's say an idealism carried into the wrong, completely, quite possibly erroneous areas where we got involved in the Vietnamese War. And so he was a man, on the one hand, of great exaltation, and on the other hand, of great tragedy, great defeat. Now, this is a classical Greek character. in the really historical sense. And by the way, you ever stop to think? You know, Johnson had other qualities about him. Did you know that under the Lyndon Johnson administration, this is an interesting thing I found out about Johnson, that under his administration, more great art, and I'm talking about great historical American art, was added to the White House collection and the National Collection than under all the other administrations combined. That's fascinating. Yes, this is a little thing that that ultimately, by probably the 21st century, could very well be a historic thing in the National Archives. But prior to that, most of the presidents had they were all under the influence of the European attitude, and so when Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy would buy a work of art to add to the White House collection, they would buy a Cezanne. Well, it's fine, except that's a great French artist. And so he commissioned people, and they went out, and Mrs. Johnson, and they gathered great amounts of very, very important American art. Art going back all the way to the time of the late Massachusetts Bay Colony period. So it's very interesting to see what history may say about Johnson in that area. In fact, I read a piece in one of the art magazines a few months back. A critic was commenting on the fact that ultimately probably the nation will owe more to the Johnson administration in the artistic sense than any administration, quite possibly since the earliest days of the American Republic, that they really made a definite and a very successful attempt to gather great amounts of art, and it was done absolutely sotto voce. It was done without great fanfare. You didn't hear a lot of talk about it much. And I'm just curious, did you know that aspect of Johnson and his administration? I'm not a wild-eyed Johnson fan, but let's say this. I think Johnson will be the president that most of us in our lifetimes quite probably remember most. When all of us are 75 and we look back, I think Johnson will be one president that we will really remember because of the turbulent times in which he was president, because of the curious dynamism of the period, and the spectacular explosion of passions and everything that happened all through his time. And it's going to be definitely going to be a controversial historical character. It's going to be difficult to judge Johnson during his lifetime. Even now, it's difficult. That's why I think a lot of people are a little muted about whether they want to say whether they're a Johnson fan or not. But as a man, he was very different from most of the people who were around him or who covered him. Interestingly enough, Kennedy had a great respect for Johnson. Kennedy personally. A lot of the people around Kennedy, there was a great undercurrent of snobism among many of them, and they kind of put Johnson down because he was a very different kind of guy than they were. They were definitely the Eastern Harvard school of intellectual. Johnson came out of another thing, another kind of life. As a matter of fact, one of the things that was characteristic of Johnson was his love of he loved action. And do you remember in the early days of his administration how they were trying to stop him from driving his car? I think he had a Lincoln Continental. I'm not sure. Might have been a Caddy. But he had a big open car, which as soon as he would get back to his ranch, now remember he's president, he would drive at 120 miles an hour. Was it a Lincoln? But he really kicked that car around. And it used to drive the Secret Service right up the wall, because it's not easy to keep up with a car that's going 120 miles an hour through the weeds. But in addition to that, it would be kind of, you know, it would be a terrible thing if the president rolls his car over twice and drives through a barn. And, you know, and in general, he was like that. He also did other things, too. I've had friends who were, you know, involved in the era who were newsmen. And Johnson used to love to sit around. He was really masculine. In one curious respect, he loved bull sessions, private bull sessions, not public ones, but private. He was terrible when they would have a panel, he would have to sit down and talk to Frank Reynolds or talk to other stiffies. And so he would get very stiff, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, with a bottle of Old Charter bourbon in front of him, and with about 7 other guys sitting around, and they could be ranged all the way from Eric Severide through John Chamberlain, it was a totally different ball game. This is WOR New York, by the way. And one of the things, one of my friends who was in the news business at that time, still is, a very famous newsman, in fact, he said that it was very common for him, he worked in the Washington beat, to get a call at like 3 o'clock in the morning. He lived out in Georgetown or someplace, and the phone would ring, and there would be LBJ on the phone. And he'd say, hey, he said, how you like a drink? And he'd say, well, you know, it's 3 o'clock, and well, come on over, what the hell, you know? So he'd get out and get in his car and drive over, and there'd be four or five guys sitting around. And Johnson, he just wanted a little company at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're sitting there and they're having their bourbon and cheese and talking till 5 in the morning. He's a fantastic character. He says, and then what would happen would be he would have a 7:30 a.m. news conference, and he said he would show up absolutely sharp and bright. And he said, and all the newsmen are sitting in the back there with their eyeballs hanging out. And they're still in a state of semi-comatose confusion. He said Johnson went right on. He was a very a very big man in that sense. He had a great almost a Falstaffian quality about him, and had tremendous personal, which didn't come over. You know, TV is a strange thing. It has a curious. Some of the people with the least amount of personal charisma somehow, curiously enough, come over the screen as having charisma. Now, I can't explain that. There's been a lot of attempts to do it, but I know some performers, friends of mine, who are really fine performers, who in person have about as much charisma as a bowl of 3-week-old cream of wheat. You know? And for some curious reason, they radiate a charisma on the air. And I think it's totally fictitious. It's a fallacious charisma, really. And yet, it's there. There are others who are the opposite. Johnson was one of those people. Johnson didn't seem to radiate much charisma over the screen. Yet, in person, it was another completely different thing. He would have been a great stage performer, which is live, you see. He would have been a great Broadway actor. As a matter of fact, I remember the only time I saw Johnson in person was one day, not long after he took office, after the assassination of John Kennedy. He came over to the United Nations. Do you recall that visit when Johnson showed up at the United Nations? And he was a tremendous man as far as his size was concerned. We have a news note here. Yeah.
What's you're not going to believe this, Gene.
I'm not going to believe it?
No, you aren't going to believe it, sir.
Here's
listen,
Lester Smith.
You listen very carefully.
I'm listening. Yeah, go ahead.
Guess what happened in Jamaica?
I suspect.
Monumental boxing upset in the world heavyweight title fight in Kingston, Jamaica. George Foreman knocked out champion Joe Frazier in the second round
good
of that
Lord.
15-rounder. I thought you'd like to hear that.
I certainly do like to hear that, because I think Foreman's going to be a great champion, frankly. Have you seen his record? He's
30, got 37 for 37,
and some big guys.
Of course, my grandmother could have licked a couple of them.
Well, I've seen your grandmother, and that doesn't surprise me, Lester. 6'7", 290 pounds. My God, she's tough. But that's a fascinating. Did you hear that? We have a new champion tonight, George Foreman, and. You remember Foreman? Foreman was there was another guy. Now, Foreman was also associated during that period. It's curiously enough, it all fits together. But Foreman became very controversial at the Olympic Games in Mexico City, it was, when Mr. Foreman knocked out his opponent, a big Russian, a big heavyweight, highly experienced Russian. He didn't knock him out. I think he outpointed him TKO. And when they were all cheering, he whips out of his trunks. Now, how he ever managed to do that, it's not easy to carry an American flag with a little stick, with a flagstaff stuck down in your trunks when you're fighting a Russian. Anyway, he whips it out and starts to, remember the flag? Well, that was during Johnson's administration, which was a controversial thing to do, if you recall, because there were a lot of hoopla about that on one side, you know, on both sides. And George Foreman, when later interviewed by outraged reporters who would much have preferred, apparently, that he gives black power salutes and all that stuff, he said, well, that's the way I feel. He said, you know, you want to tell me how to act? He said, I feel that way. He said, I love this country. And he did. And so tonight, George Foreman takes over the heavyweight title of the world. In fact, there were people at the time who said that was true, that he would eventually anyway. But that's a fantastic news note. This has been a day full of strange news. Some sad, some interesting, others wildly fascinating. And you know, that's part of a president's time since Johnson is no longer. Did you know that Johnson, this is another thing probably that people don't talk much about, the personal style of a man often affects the people around him. Now, let's face it, almost all the people who cover presidents are men who come from big newspapers, the Times, all the big papers of the world, the Washington Post, the London papers, and so on. And these are usually men who have come from mostly higher accepted institutions of higher learning. And in other words, they're part of the intellectual world that we live in. Well, Johnson had odd tastes for them. So one of his tastes, by the way, did you know that Johnson was a C&W nut? Yes, Johnson loved country western music, which of course is natural. It was part of the heritage of the country that he lived in. And Johnson had a collection of C&W records. Now, did you notice what Nixon said very discreetly the other night in the middle of a dance? Somebody said, he just casually threw out what he digs in music, and it kind of surprises you. Everyone would think he'd be a Lawrence Welk type. No way. He happens to be, as a matter of fact, a classical music buff. And he says at night, when he's making unimportant decisions, he has LPs in which he's playing... He's playing Mussorgsky, of all people, he mentioned in his comments, which threw me completely. I mean, of all people, Mussorgsky. So the personal man rarely comes over the public figure, is all I'm trying to say. When Johnson is giving a speech, or when Nixon is giving a speech, or when whatever president or whatever mayor is involved. And another thing about politics, it's almost an inbuilt tragic situation. You're a hero today, and you're a total bum tomorrow. And to the same people. As a matter of fact, we have it today on the newsstands, a classical example of that. Just a few years ago, the Village Voice just went out of its mind over Lindsay. I mean, the Village Voice wrote about Lindsay as if, you know, he could walk on water. And in fact, I suspect that they expected him to do that. However, he was their darling. Today, on the front page of the Voice is a total blast of the very same guy. So you have to learn to temper what you think of a man with a larger historical perspective. I noticed one of the black leaders, again, I said that one of the black leaders today made the comment that probably more than any president ever in history since Lincoln, he did more for the black people. And this is quite probably true. And that's a pretty important thing to do in this country. And his imprint on the presidency will last for many, many years, even though it wasn't a particularly long imprint. But what he would do, among other things, he had a collection of these records in his own private apartment in the White House, and once in a while these guys would show up, the elegant newsmen from the New York Times, and in the background they could hear it playing away there, see? In the background. And here's Lyndon sitting there with his bottle of Old Charter there, his friends around, a couple of old dogs hanging around under the desk, and Maybelle Carter is singing. Well, now, I doubt whether many of the newsmen even knew who Maybelle Carter is, particularly the kind of things she sang. Now, most of us think of country and western as Johnny Cash or Glenn Campbell. Those guys bear about as much relationship to country and western as Eddie Fisher bears to Grand Opera. But the Maybelle Carter is singing the real thing. And this is the kind of thing that I suspect would be more proper to play at the passing of Lyndon Johnson than anything you could conceivably play. It's a great country western hymn. This, by the way, is Maybelle Carter and some boys I know, Merle Travis and Hank Penny and a group of the Authentics. This is about as American as you can get. Will the circle be unbroken? Maybelle Carter, by the way, is this woman who is singing is actually older than Lyndon Johnson. Not this guy, but when Maybelle sings.
Undertaker, please drive slow. For this body you are holding, Lord, I hate to see her go.
Will the circle be unbroken? By and by, Lord, by and by. There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Come in, Doc Watson.
This is Doc Watson, another authentic member of the small clan. I think the sound of Will the Circle Be Unbroken echoing through the White House confused James Weston a bit.
In the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Now, this is Maybelle Carter.
Mother, she was gone.
Age roughly 70.
Oh, my brother, sister's crying. What a home so sad and lone.
In here. What a classic. That really, really says it. Now, that's about as authentic as you can get in 20th century Americana. Too bad I don't have there'll be Smoke on the Water or Great Speckled Bird, all of which would be very in keeping. You heard that, Ed. You, that's Vermont in your part of the country. You understand that. This is the real thing. As they say, here's a little note here. We have a commercial here. Good news, Islip Long Island. Let's see, Islip. And all you good neighbors, another exciting new Village supermarket opens Tuesday, the 23rd, January 23rd at 8 a.m. on Sunrise Highway and Saxon Avenue. They say that you should come in and see the most exciting advance in shopping since supermarkets were born. Breathtaking early American decor. Wonderful new departments, and best of all, the tremendous variety of quality foods at lowest possible Village prices, plus an in-store pharmacy where you can have a prescription priced first and then filled while you do your shopping. So come and enjoy a big, beautiful new Village food store. It's on Sunrise Highway and Saxon Avenue, Islip, Long Island. and bring the whole family to the dawn, quote, of a new shopping era. Come to the Village. That's not the Village Village down there around Greenwich Street, but out in Islip. You know, speaking of Johnson, as I said, the only time I saw Johnson personally was at the UN. I went over there when he, right after he took over as president, and he visited the UN. I don't think he gave a speech or anything that day. He just visited the UN. He was an overpoweringly physical guy. The first thing that hit you about Johnson was that he was bigger than anybody. A huge man. And much bigger than he looked on television. TV has a tendency to either make people look smaller or larger, but he definitely looked smaller on TV than he looked in life. Did you see him at all, Herb? Well, you agree with that. Boy, he was tremendous. I don't know how tall he was, but he must have been 6'3"? Well, he seemed taller than that. At 6'3", some guys don't seem big. No, he seemed taller than that. He really did. He had huge shoulders, and there was a great presence he had. And when Johnson walked on the scene, you knew that somebody important had arrived just by the very feeling around him. But, presidents are interesting. I don't think, of course, there's no office in the world that's anything like the presidency. We don't, there's no other country has the equivalent of our president. For example, in England, the prime minister is always the appointed, really, the head of the party that is put into power, and he always represents, at that time, the party that's in power. Whereas in our system, that's not necessarily true. In fact, more often than not, the president represents the party that's out of power. So he's got a curious. We've got this. Yeah, that's right. Now, I do remember that. Did somebody call and ask about that? Yes, I do remember this. I remember Johnson making himself highly unpopular with all the senators. Somebody called this in. He called all the senators back to Washington over the Christmas vacation and get the work done. Do you remember that? You get back here. Oh, I remember the terrible uproar about that. Johnson was a guy who believed in getting it done, and he set about doing it. At one thing you must say about Johnson's term in office, it was not a term of complacency. At any point, I mean, he got through more fantastic legislation in spite of great opposition. I'm talking about social legislation. You know that when they passed the Civil Rights Bill that Johnson was riding through the Senate shortly after he became president, that there was the longest filibuster in history was carried out against that bill, if you recall that. And Johnson just rode it right on until they got it through. And it was important. I mean, this is not a light thing to do, as Mr. Nixon has found out. Getting Congress to do anything constructive is not an easy thing, primarily because there's too many forces at work. It almost cancels itself out often. 96 guys and 400 and some odd congressmen, and everyone with his own constituency. Ultimately, you wonder how they ever get anything done. But he did it. He carried it out. Now, of course, he was considered among Senate peers and people who watched him work, quite probably, I noticed Javits said that tonight, quite probably the greatest parliamentarian in the history of our country. In other words, he really knew the rules of Senate, of the parliamentary procedures involved. He knew how to get a bill through and in and out of it, out of committee and onto the floor and ultimately passed, which is no mean feat. And quite probably the greatest Senate whip ever known. He could get that stuff done. Now, again, you must understand that I'm not condoning Johnson's record in foreign affairs. I think that the Vietnamese War has been a colossal blunder. Although, again, I think Johnson was caught in it as much as anybody else. I'm not like a lot of people who will blame it on Johnson per se. Incidentally, that is another difficult thing to say. You do not know what history might ultimately say about this whole thing. So, no way of knowing. We tend to believe that we all do know what history will say. But yet, we have an interesting example of a president who has just passed on, Truman. But during a large part of Truman's lifetime, in fact, immediately following leaving the office, Truman was anything but a respected, honored president. Do you recall that? It was only later events and later developments and later re-evaluation and so forth of what he did during his time that he's come to be an accepted great president. But had he died 8 or 9 or 10 years ago, he would have died without that knowledge. As it is now, it's pretty much of an accepted fact that he was a great president, and an unexpectedly great one, too, at that. So nobody knows what makes a great president. It's not necessarily education. If it were education, a lot of our greatest presidents would have fallen by the wayside, among them Lincoln. He did not have the best education in the world, and so it's difficult to say what makes a great president. Quite often, it's adversity. In fact, a president is often not going to go down in history much if he presides over a period of good feeling. In other words, if nothing really bad happens during his administration, he's liable to be forgotten by history pretty much. And there have been many presidents of that type. Almost every president that we look back upon as a great president is one who has gone through fantastic problems. Lincoln, certainly Roosevelt, Wilson too, probably, and Johnson certainly will go down in history in that light. But I've just wondered how long our history will last. In other words, we seem to take our history as kind of a foregone conclusion that there will be 1,000 years pass and there will be presidents. That's not necessarily true. Has it occurred to you that maybe 300 or 400 years from now that there won't even be presidents? That who knows what can happen in history? No one knows. And that there may not even be presidents the way we know them now. And it could very well be that our history that we all have lived through, our nation up to this time, it's a very new country, could very well be the beginning of a country rather than the aging and the decline of a country. This could be the beginning of a country. A lot of people felt this way, among them Johnson, incidentally. It's not a popular feeling. Of course, during Johnson's day, it was very popular to think that America's sick, it's declining, and it's over and the whole bit. And he represented a minority view. And I think he may have been right. That this is the beginning of a country. We're only, 200 years old. That's nothing as far as countries go. Just the beginning. Why the smallest banana republic is 200 years old or better. And I'm using that phrase not in a pejorative sense, but a small country that depends on bananas for its livelihood is not necessarily 200 years old or better, or maybe 500 or 600. But you know, Johnson was, among other things, Johnson was a great horseman. Johnson rode well. And when I was working on the Today Show, I did a stint at one time on the Today Show with John Chancellor, when John was the host or the anchor man of the show. We went out to Texas. We did a show in Fort Worth. In fact, we spent the whole week there. And as you know, on the Today Show, everybody has his role. Well, our Barbara Walters was a woman named Louise King. You might remember her on the show. She was the Louise King of that period. And John Chancellor was the Hugh Downs or the Frank McGee of that period. And I was the Joe Garagiola of the period. And so I had to do all the stuff. See, that means that whenever they had a motor scooter that they were talking about, I had to ride the damn thing. John Chancellor would just look a little pained and say, now we go to Gene Shepherd for the motor scooter bit. And I had to do these things. So among other things, I was the guy that did all the riding on that show. I happen to enjoy riding, and I did all the riding of these magnificent horses down in Texas, and they brought them out. We in fact covered the Fort Worth stock auction, the stock show down there, right in the big arena. And so we photographed the show outside in the cutting ring, where they were having the world championship cutting contest. And I was riding this magnificent cutting horse. Boy, a beautiful thing. $250,000 worth of horse flesh. Yes, indeed. And that horse was so sensitive, and so not only sensitive, but so conscious of your every move, that this horse would do exactly what you wanted him to do without any movement, really, on your part. So you just move your body slightly to the left, and he moved to the left. Fantastic horse. Well, among other things that were there were a collection of from the LBJ Ranch, some of the great quarter horses that Johnson rode and had on his ranch. Johnson's private... What was the name of his horse? Do you recall the name of his horse? He had a famous quarter horse that Johnson would ride whenever he went down home. And Johnson's horse was there. And he was a great horseman. Not many presidents in our time have been. In fact, I can't think of any. Who were certainly not Nixon, as far as I know. I can't imagine Nixon on a horse. Kennedy had back problems, and I doubt whether he did much riding. Certainly Eisenhower might have been a good horseman. In fact, he was. I think Eisenhower owned a famous Arabian that was given to him by one of the heads of a Bedouin tribe, a sheikh, from Palestine, in that area. In fact, I saw the area it came from. But all I'm saying here is that Johnson was a kind of president that I doubt whether we'll ever see much again. A guy that comes out of a little simple one-room school who literally lives in a little kitchen. Did you see the pictures on TV tonight of his earliest days when he was living in this little tiny house and there was a bad-looking refrigerator back of him, and he was teaching school and all that. Well, this sort of thing was really, in a sense, curiously, in a democracy, held against him. I think that we're coming to the point now where if you have what used to be called a humble background, that will be literally held against you, which possibly shows a growing sense of aristocracy in the country, or a growing monarchical view that many people have of the presidency today. But he's gone, and he will be remembered. I'm making no value judgments here, but Johnson, you'll remember him in your time and your life. And when you remember him, it will always be with mixed emotions. On the one hand, you couldn't help but admire the guy for a lot of the things he did. On the other hand, who knows? And just like every great tragic figures, and I think Johnson ultimately will be considered that, he is very ambivalent. Just like Hamlet, for example. On the one hand, you could hate Hamlet for his constant complaining. On the other hand, Hamlet had many of the aspects of true nobility. And so I suspect ultimately so will Johnson. And he certainly was his own man. Took a lot of guts to come out and simply say, I'm not running, and I'm doing this for the good of the country, which he did, and surprised many of his critics, and surprised even his closest advisors. You remember that night? Watching television, he just dropped it at the end. Truly theatrical bomb he laid on people. But Johnson was that way. He walked his own way. He was hard drinking, hard loving, hard riding, a big man in every sense of the word. And he's driven his loss, long, dusty ride down that road with that Lincoln Continental roaring full out. Loved to drive fast. And in a sense, I guess he was a great loner, which, by the way, is very typical of people from Texas. There's a curious look in the eyes of many Texans. Maybe it's seeing too many long prairies and knowing how small man ultimately is. Because you get that sense when you walk along that great prairie in Texas that you may be a big man down at Neiman Marcus, but you ain't nothing but a little squinch bug under the great big sun that moves around and around and around. So Lyndon Johnson, hail and farewell. Sweet Prince, sweet Johnson, sweet rider, sweet bourbon drinker, and a great man in history. Whether you like him or not, he will stand there. WOR New York. You stay tuned for Lister Smith and the news.